everybody. Welcome to the Dad's Move podcast. I'm your host, Joe Saladino, and I am so honored to be in Tacoma today talking to Hannah.
Hi.
Hi. So I didn't ask how should I title you, intro you, so you can introduce yourself.
I'm a firefighter EMT out here in Pierce County. Is that what you mean?
Exactly.
Okay. Yes.
Exactly. I couldn't remember if you, because I know your department and some others, you have to be either a paramedic or EMT as mm-hmm. well, right?
Correct.
And I couldn't remember which. So
EMT.
So EMT out of East Pierce.
Correct.
Do you have like a home base specific?
My home station is off of Lake Taps.
Okay.
But we have stations from like Edgewood and Milton area out to South Prairie. Through Bonnie Lake and Sumner and everywhere.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So covering a lot of space.
I do move around, but I do have a home station.
Okay. So we're going to talk about your life a little and how you became a firefighter and what that means and working with kiddos maybe on the spectrum or other additional needs. And I'm just so happy to be able to talk about this with you today. So thank you.
Thank you.
So I usually start these off with born and raised. Where were you born and raised?
Born and raised in Texas.
You're a ways from home.
Yes.
Okay.
Born and raised in Texas and then moved to the Pacific Northwest, Oregon specifically. How many years ago was that?
So how long were you in Texas?
I graduated high school and then maybe a year or two later, my time frame is a little jumbled
okay, but,
in my
but
head.
So your childhood was Texas.
Correct.
Yeah. What part?
Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Okay. So big city.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like school? Did school go well? Was it...
My view of it now is a little different.
Sure.
I got through it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Looking back now, I can see where I struggled a lot. But we're here.
Right. No, for sure.
I got here.
That's a pretty similar response, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out of high school, were you college bound, military bound, just trying to make it bound?
I started at a university in Texas and then didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I have a first responder family. Like my dad was police and I had an uncle who was fire. And so I think there's just something appealing about that life. And so I started reaching out of like how to start that process, especially from nothing. In my mind, school at that time felt like a waste of time because then I knew what I wanted to do.
Right.
So I felt like there wasn't really a point in a way to like go spend time at college. So I did a semester and then kind of found the path I needed to take to pursue fire. And I had an aunt at the time in Oregon, and through like looking at odd jobs and just, I had worked on the coast out there as a photographer and everything. I was just kind of spending time elsewhere, getting my feet on the ground, and I had done a women's fire camp type thing for Portland.
Oh.
And that kind of sold the deal. I was like, yep, this seems like it.
So I was going to ask at some point, and this is just perfect timing, because I'm sure you get the question like, oh, did you always want to be a firefighter? You know, because it's like the kid thing, mm-hmm. right? Like at some point you go, you see firefighters, you get the hat, you go on the rig, and you're like, dude. And then... 99% of people,
nope,
doesn't happen. But so family, was there a point though in your childhood where you're like, I don't want to be a cop, I'm going fire or something like that?
No, that's what people say is not wanting to go police route and like fire's the better option. My dad was like, good job.
People like me if I'm fire.
Yeah. But yeah, all growing up, I mean, as a kid, I was like, I'm going to be a professional soccer player.
Ooh, and okay.
I'm
going to
do that. Or I'm very in the arts. So I thought maybe something down that route or photography or something like that to use my creative brain. But I think just like realistically, I had to find something and kind of follow the path of like what everyone is supposed to do and get a real job. And right. So it just kind of happened, I guess. Okay. I had considered military just because the active aspect mm-hmm. in a way is similar. But this just worked out nicely.
Okay. So you moved to Oregon.
Yes.
How was that? Because that's a pretty big culture difference.
Yes. Right up my alley.
Awesome. I love when the culture changes.
Yes. Uh-huh. That is how I felt. It's why I moved in a lot of ways of just, I guess, being in an environment that felt safer mm-hmm. for me.
Sure.
Which isn't everyone's cup of tea, and that's fine.
Some people move to Texas.
Yes. Like, we have had people in our department move to Texas.
And that's fine. And that's great.
Yes.
I
cost of living's nice.
I've heard that. I've heard that. My wife just got back from Austin.
Oh,
and she was like, Austin's great. And then we're always that like, ooh, we should explore, we should move, whatever. My mother would send people to bring us back. Like, it's not going to happen. But we were always...
Austin is nice, though.
Well, we talk about that. And then I'm just like, yeah, but there's state laws.
Uh-huh.
That's my problem. Yep. There's state laws.
Right.
But so anyway, okay, so you're in Oregon at this point.
Yeah, woohoo.
Yay! What's the next step? What's the next step that you take?
So through, like, working on the coast, and then I had attended that camp, I talked to several of them of like what I need to do next. And it was basically to get my EMT so that I already had that when applying for jobs.
Looks nice and attractive.
It did look nice. Okay. So then after getting that, which was out of Vancouver, spent a few months getting that certificate and then started applying. There was like a physical test you take and an online test that's most departments are lumped into using that, I don't know the word.
Like that model or that?
Yeah, they'll take your scores from those things.
Oh, okay, so kind of like college with like a, or like military with ASVAB or that, yeah. Where it's just a standardized.
Right,
okay.
Yeah, that's a good word. Yeah,
we'll get there. Between the two of us, we'll get there.
No, okay.
We'll share, yeah. We'll share.
So, yeah, you basically submit those to the departments that you want to apply for, and depending on where you land, would get you an interview. And so I spent about 3 years applying to different departments between Oregon and Washington.
Oh, wow.
And then it worked out up here, and I moved up here, and yeah, by myself up here.
Wow. That's a long travel to get.
We made it.
Well, and not a long. You got the pup.
Yeah. That, and he's newer.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Adding to the home.
Yes.
For those listening, I showed up and there's a puppy. And most of you know my affinity for dogs. So it was just like, oh, okay.
Can't go wrong.
You really can't. Already have a buddy. So is 3 years kind of standard for looking, or was that a long time, or was that fast, or do you know?
I think that is dependent on gender,
okay,
and race and
societal everything. Uh-huh,
correct.
Okay.
I think for me it was probably average. I know for like the traditional, like the white male, right, there's more
6 foot one,
yes,
white male, knows,
right out of the military,
right, knows somebody in the department.
Yep. There's just, for whatever reason, a lot more of that stereotype applying. Mm-hmm. So it, I know like years ago, it would take them like 10 years, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like it was just a long journey, which is why they would try to get those EMT certs and paramedic certs, anything to set them apart.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I mean, now we're hiring so much and you don't have to have any experience.
Oh, wow.
So I think things are changing, which I think is wonderful. But I think for me at that time, it was probably average. It felt like forever.
That sounds like a long time to just be like anybody.
And that standardized test expires. So you would like have, and you have to pay for it. So you would have to like keep doing it. And it was terrible.
How many times did you have to take it?
I think probably three once a year or something like that. Yeah.
After the second.
They'll get you.
I hate standardized tests.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's a good thing that when I tried to become a volunteer firefighter like a decade ago, they didn't take me, because then I would have been like, oh, I could go full firefighter. And then I'd been like, how many standardized tests? And I'm done.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Hate them.
Three.
Yeah.
But so you get hired on.
Yes.
You move up. How was the move?
Fine. I moved into an apartment at the time and went through academy. And
how was academy?
Well, it's also another thing that I look back now and I'm like, how did I do that?
Okay.
Which I don't know when to throw this in. I am an autistic female, like, so I guess through like explaining things, when I say my view has changed, it's because after I was diagnosed, just my view of my whole life shifted. And so I look at things with a very different lens now. Academy was, at the time, it was like, it was fun. Like, we had a very bonded group going through together. We were living together at one of the stations at the time. We just had a blast. Like, it was a lot of fun. We got the rest of our certificates. And then you go to... you get put on probation, so like on the line with our crews rather than like away at academy.
Mm-hmm.
And got through that somehow as well. And then
with all eyes on you, right?
And then you get put on the line and you're on your own.
Whew.
But looking back now, I do wonder how I did that, or if I would be able to do it again. Just because I'm more aware of my limits and boundaries and abilities, and it's just different now.
How do you think you got any idea how you got through?
I was so unaware of myself and on autopilot, like I've been my entire life, because I was diagnosed in 2020. So as an adult, and it just, I think I was just on autopilot, unaware of like myself to a degree where I wasn't in tune with myself to even know. I knew I was struggling, but in a why or what. And
just pushing through the struggle with whatever you had to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a good time.
In academy, were you the only female? Were there other?
In my like hiring group from my specific department, yes. I was one of eight or nine. And then we go to the academy with a bunch of different departments.
Okay.
So there was, I wasn't the only out of that. There were several others.
Okay.
Which we're all pretty close to. So that's cool. We've stayed in contact.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Lone wolves out there.
I gotta think that's so. I'm trying to think, because over the years there's been change, but not a ton of change.
Mm-hmm. We're getting there. I mean, even recently we've hired so much the last few years, and within each group there's at least a couple females, which I think is great. Changing Fantastic. The stereotype.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not just expecting.
Uh huh.
A big old. ex-military vet to show up every time.
Yeah. And then sometimes we go to houses and they're shocked. Like, it's just, it's very, especially like the older generation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very humorous.
Wait, you're a fuck? Huh?
They'll really question me being able to like pick them up.
Oh, well, that's the first thing, right?
Come on.
That's the first thing, right? Well, you know, if you got to get anybody down the stairs,
yeah,
ain't going to happen.
I'll just leave you there, I guess. I mean,
why was the response time so bad? Well, we had to call, and the next one that came, that was a female, yeah, too. Yep. So we had to wait for like three. Eventually, they sent a dude.
Right.
But until then, yeah, just writhing all day. There's nothing else we can do either.
It's funny. My crew guys get a kick out of it too.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Oh, I bet. They're like, really? Like, good, you gave us something to talk about for the next couple of weeks.
Yep. That's great.
Okay. So we've established that you can pick people up and move them around.
I promise.
I believe it. I didn't have that assumption walking in. That must be somebody else. I did not have that assumption. I believe you can do your job.
Thank you.
Amazing.
Thank
you. Right?
I had to do that test three times. I mean, come on.
Clearly.
By now.
Three times and the academy. Clearly they'd know. 20 years in, they're like, did you know Hannah can't pick anybody up?
I skirted through.
How? Yeah. Amazing. Your entire career, retired. They're like, the last That's thing, right. You got to take this bag downstairs. And you're like, guess what? I can't do it. I can't get my gold watch. I can't do it.
Yep.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so you get hired, you go through academy, eventually full-fledged firefighter.
Yep, I did it.
Did it.
Yes.
Yes. Everybody has to be either an EMT or a paramedic, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So do you get like put into those roles?
Yeah, so we run engines and medic units. Some people do like private medic units and stuff like that. So we're all lumped into one. It's our units. Mm. And on each medic unit is typically one firefighter EMT and one firefighter paramedic.
Okay.
And then on engines, it's usually at least one medic involved in the crew, and the rest would then be EMTs.
Okay. And so what are you on right now?
It varies.
Okay.
Every day is different.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We're equipped to be on any of it because we house both units. And so, yeah, whatever staffing looks like is basically you get put.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Is there one that you think you're on more than another, or is it just all up in the air?
I think it just varies. Yeah. Depending on the day, I think it balances out. So when we have probationary members come, it kind of moves things more because they're needed on a certain unit to get their checkoffs and everything.
Okay.
And so, it really just depends on the day.
Wow. I did not know that. I'm glad I asked.
Yeah.
Half of this is just me learning. I love it. Hopefully everybody else is learning something too. So then I would ask, what's a normal day look like for you? Ish. If there is a normal day, what does it look like for you?
So shift is 8 to 8, 8 a.m. to 8 a.m. the next day, 24-hour shifts. So I usually get to work around 7:30 and have breakfast. And by that time, the other crew is still on. So we're like swapping rigs, like our gear and everything through that transition. And we'll usually, like in the mornings, we'll wash the rigs and do equipment checks and do all that depending on what day it is. We have training days where we'll do a crew training, whether medical or fire related. And then it's just kind of between all of that is calls going on, which can happen at any time.
Sure, sure. Nature of the job.
Engine crews usually go get meal stuff, like for dinner. We have lunch in there somewhere. And then, yeah, we'll make dinner. In the evenings, that's kind of when things are winding down, at least for like chores and actual, like, I guess, work related type activity. And then, yeah, after dinner, it's kind of like our own personal time. If we want to have movie time, a little family night. Yes.
Movie time. Okay, now I might need to go back to try and be a firefighter. Right? There's movie time.
You hope. You hate when you like 10 minutes in.
And then I get a call?
Yeah.
Be like, oh, nobody watched the rest of this. If anybody tells me what happened.
Right.
Are you able to like take 5 minutes to warn everybody before you go? Or
you hope.
Be like, oh, we got to get to this fire. But remember.
Yeah.
I don't know how he dies in this. Don't tell me.
Yeah. Well, we hope the crew would just, the rest of the crew would wait. Or we're all going on the call. Because right. Most calls are medical. Okay. So it's both engine and medic unit will go together.
So you all miss out on the movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Maybe another night.
You haven't put DVD players in the rigs yet?
Oh, like the screen in the back of the headrest. Yeah. No.
Is that just too much for funding?
I don't know that the people would go for it.
It's like you can have another hose on the rig, or we got this sound system
and
this audio video to put in.
I'll request it.
Yes. I will be so happy if I ever see that. Be like,
these are where your tax dollars are going.
But you only get to watch like cartoon versions of firefighters. Oh, so like King of the Hill or Simpsons episodes. Of firefighters. That's all you get to watch when you're using it, though.
Funny. Yeah.
Just to remind you what not to do.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, so no calls. So movie night.
Get
to sleep a little bit.
Hang out, go to bed. Hope there's no calls in the night, which is rare. But
sure.
Yeah, it's just kind of typical day. Like, I mean, we try to work out in the day. Like have a fitness time. Everything is revolved around the calls, though. So if we're not running calls, we're just kind of getting stuff done at the station, doing our things we need to do, just going through the day.
Is it typically for a while the same people and the same crew that you're working with, or does it switch a lot?
So we all do have home stations, but like. With moving around, it may be the same crew. Some people may be in on overtime, so you may see other faces from different shifts. But if you're going to a different station, you might see those home station people, if that makes sense.
Okay. Because I have the good old stereotype, right? I've got that stereotype of the...
It's just same people.
Same people all the time. And then you're like, oh, no, we're family. Like, we're like...
Yeah, it just with people having to move around because those extra like probationary members, it kind of shifts the way staffing looks. It really just depends.
Sure.
I wouldn't say it's super regular. It's just dependent where you go.
Oh, no, yeah. for sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And like you were talking, staffing and everything else and... If you don't have enough people to cover everything, then it can't just be the same all the time and the same. Huh.
Yeah. I don't think I explained it well at all, but hopefully it makes sense.
Okay. Makes sense to me.
Okay.
I don't know what more you could have explained. I think it makes sense to me. Okay. So one of the things we're going to talk about is working with kiddos with additional needs, with autism. I want to talk about what a call might look like with that, what parents can share, maybe what parents can tell dispatch. I need to talk to dispatch too, but that's,
ooh, yeah, that would be a good one.
That's another one. And then finding out their timing. What it's like, for you and what you do. So, I guess what I'd like and I know the kits that you have in the rigs. I want to make sure we get to that and talk about that. Because I was like, she does what? Cool. So actually, let's do that first. We'll talk about like a possible call and what might happen and stuff like that. But let's go back. So now you do a training.
So we have usually an annual refresher for special considerations patients.
Okay.
And so last year or the year before, I knew that was coming up the next year type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And with my own diagnosis and everything and some calls we ran that felt a little triggering, I wanted to kind of take that on to help train our people. So I put together a class that was for our department.
So you took the initiative.
I did.
To be like, this is lacking.
We need to know more. Yes.
Oh, that speaks to my soul. So what did that look? How long did it take you to put together?
Months.
Yeah. Well, you're working. It's not like you're not. It's not like you're sitting on the couch eating Cheetos just blowing your day away.
I think it was probably early to mid, whatever that previous year was, to like the beginning of the next year when I was actually presenting it.
Oh, very cool. Mm-hmm. And so how long is the class?
It's 3 hours.
Does that seem long or short to you?
With how much information I don't even include, it mm-hmm. doesn't seem like enough, but that is a long class. Like,
okay.
To me, it being my like special interest, I could sit there all day and talk about it. But for people receiving it, retention spans just don't last that long. It's a lot of information, especially for like new concepts. And if mm-hmm. you're not interested in it, it doesn't. Yeah.
Right. No, I can understand that. But having a lot of information and then not even having the time to give all the information you want to.
Yeah. I had to cut back.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. How many times have you taught it?
8, I believe.
Wow.
And then I'll do it next month to some of our new recruits.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You can say this or not on recording, but do you feel supported in doing this by command?
Yes. I think when I had the idea, there were definitely several people who were like on my team to like make this happen. Especially like through the chain of command and everything. Couldn't have done it without them. And then getting the hits together and like funding for that, like putting money actually towards it. I did have help and support.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So what's the class like? Can you give me an overview of the 3-hour class?
So I'm standing at the front of the, just kidding.
Okay, so
let me set the
Everybody should know this. Rule number one of being funny on microphones is make sure the host isn't drinking coffee at that moment. I mean, it's your house. It's going to be a mess in your house.
Please don't.
Yeah, so, well, that's on you if you make it up. So set the mood. So is there a projector? Lights on? Does everybody have to move to the front of the class?
I make everyone sit right in front.
There we go.
Make everyone as uncomfortable as possible.
Participation.
Yes.
Or you have to take that test again. If you don't do the participation in this.
But yeah, it's a about a 3-hour presentation over PowerPoint. And through that, I give my story. I educate like what it is, autism is not, because there's lots of misconceptions, a lot of misunderstandings. And through that, I kind of aim it towards what we do. So like kind of giving an example of a call, what we can do, again, what like parents can do, mm-hmm. how we've talked about. What to look out for, how to recognize it, even if people aren't diagnosed or something's not shared, like there's still specific traits that you can look mm-hmm. out for, even to err on the side of caution, just to like be more compassionate.
I was just about to say, yes. It sounds like Compassion is what it's
a big like. Thing is just people's assumptions. So like when we see certain things, we gather assumptions, and typically in the autistic realm, those are incorrect. And yeah, just how, yeah, there's just so much stereotype. So like even within our job, how things can lead to quote aggression, which typically isn't what that is. Mm-hmm. Just trying to like kill the stigma, I guess, and educate. And yeah, I show some videos. I talk through our kit. I'm just trying to think of like the I talk to through the kits that we have, and then like why those are necessary. Yeah, I think it's just a blend of like giving my experience, and I share a lot of stories because these people know me.
Mm-hmm.
And so to even be able to give examples of like stuff or interactions they've had with me where I'm like, this is what's going on in that moment.
This is what you were seeing.
They can relate it. And sure. Then they're like, oh, like, okay.
So maybe the next time you see this or see this on a call.
Yeah. So yeah, just trying to support differences out there. And yeah.
See, this is why people like firefighters. See, this.
Well.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I said it, not you. See, it's safe as long as I say it. Okay, so that's great. How many people in a class usually?
I think that ranged from maybe 15 to 25-ish.
Okay. So a significant amount of folks in there. What's the feedback you get?
I got really good feedback. People loved it. I think because they knew me, it just related a lot of things, which maybe makes it easier. Like maybe it wouldn't be the same for people who don't know me giving that all my stories and everything. But I think it was just like personal to them as well, with me being them,
right?
And that being my family and everything. And so, yeah, they said they learned a lot and appreciated the vulnerability, because a lot of, I think there was one class I didn't cry.
Yeah.
Of just, yeah, trying to let it be known. And I keep saying, like, to just raise awareness. Right. Yeah.
Well, and I think that vulnerability gives it that extra little power and that extra little punch.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, no, she's real about this. This is honest. So what are these kits? How did you come to this, to put this together? And then, yeah, take us through.
Through, I guess, learning about or trying to put information together for my class. There are many departments who had kits, and there's even studies of like how the numbers towards first responders that have had no training or knowledge of autism, it's so high.
Yeah.
And so there's very few kits around, but how beneficial they've been to these departments, and just kind of looking at what's in them as well as what I would think would be important with my own experiences and stuff I've seen on calls. So I just kind of made a list, a mix of like what I've seen before and what else I thought could be beneficial. And yeah, it's basically weighted blanket, headphones, sunglasses, fidget toys, a dry erase board, a sheet where you can like point. So whether on the body or certain feeling faces or to spell something. Which same with the whiteboard. If like writing's easier for like non-speaking individuals. And then even these cards we got custom made, where it's, if we go on families with autistic family members, we can like give them one, and it's, the front has maybe 5 to 10 kind of factual like what autism is, what this person might be struggling with. And then on the back, it's the like, hello, my name is, and like emergency contact mm-hmm. number, just to like provide stuff to families because there's not a lot out there. So if they came into contact with, you know, whether it be police or other first responders, maybe that's some little piece of information that could help mm-hmm. those people, sorry, take care of then these people. And so, yeah, even with research of all that, we call them sensory kits, mm-hmm. but they also, I mean, language barriers we run into. So maybe writing or pointing could be easier with that. There's a lot of studies for weighted blankets being beneficial for like patients with Parkinson's or dementia. Mm. So, I mean, we can use them in other ways as well.
It's not just, oh, no one here has autism. Sorry.
I'm like, I can't open it. I'll take this to my room. I'm like in there with the weighted blanket. This is mine.
Well, and a lot of that just seems like really, just really makes sense.
Right.
Especially having something for nonverbal folks, or what if something happened and you can't be verbal?
Right.
Like, yeah, you can't really plan otherwise for that.
Yep.
So
we even like deaf individuals, mm. I've been on many calls of they're like trying to speak to us, and or they have phone apps. Maybe oh, sure. that kind of helps.
But in an emergency, kind of nice to be like, that's where it hurt. Like,
right.
Point there.
Or literally just being able to write in front of us kind of quickly with a dry erase board or something. Yeah.
That's awesome. And so is that in every rig?
Every medic unit has one.
Okay.
Those will most like, I mean, they will be on every call.
Oh, okay.
Where the engines aren't always guaranteed. So every medic unit has one.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. How'd you find the funding?
It was just our EMS division had, okay. I guess with everything that we do get for just like essentials mm-hmm. and our gear and everything, there was the ability to also add these to the rigs.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. And at any time, if I'm not asking a question, I should be.
Oh, I'll tell you.
Please.
Please. Wait, what are you asking me?
That was...
Help.
That was a rough one, Joe.
I'm more just... Which I want to preface now. I am very awkward in stuff like this. So even...
You've been great.
Well, I'm glad you think so.
No, I think so. Everybody's going to think so. You've been... Nah.
All right.
Wow, people are way too focused on how awkward I am. They're, you know,
we can be awkward together.
Yes. Community. So let's talk through a possible call. So call 911. Let's say kiddo's bleeding more than I can take care of as a parent.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure they're going to ask a bunch of questions about the medical part as they're calling you going, go to this address.
Like dispatch.
Yeah. Sorry. What kind of things could I possibly tell dispatch about my kiddo that they can do anything about, that they can relay?
Are we talking specifically with like autistic patients?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, and anything in that kind of realm.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Like what? And I guess also
just
too,
challenges
like,
and differences.
Yeah. Cause I'm thinking just the things I can think of is like, if my kiddo has difficulty with loud noises,
right?
Mm-hmm. Is there something I can say they can be relayed so that not even more freaked out when you roll up or anything in that realm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to at least get, I mean, with my department, my goal is to, like, if we're told they're autistic or whatever they're dealing with, that is the cue for us to ask questions. I don't know how much dispatch will take in all of that because mm-hmm. they're more just like, we get automated like recording tones of the address and just what, and what the call is. And then we'll get notes of if there's further stuff type thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how much into it, which that probably would be good.
Yeah, no, that's why. Yeah, yeah.
Of just like,
that's why I'm talking to everybody.
I know there's been cases of like in the notes, it'll say that the patient's autistic.
Okay.
But I think there's still a lot of agencies that will read that and not know what it means or just disregard.
All right. It. Deal with it when we get there.
I would say, but sharing that there is something like that present, I think is very beneficial. And I guess how I was saying, yeah, my goal is to hear that word and that be like a trigger word for us to be thinking about, well, what are their sensory sensitivities? What may they need? How do they communicate? Mm-hmm. Like all those types of things where whether if the kits come in handy or not, like they're sensory seeking.
Right.
Patients. Sure. And so just to kind of have that level of awareness to like dig and get that information so that it can help us. And I mean, I've heard stories within my department where like the kits came in handy.
Mm-hmm.
I have used them. I've recognized patients that didn't share this information. And it led to like our crew literally asking, and it was true.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think having that, even if it's just as simple as like being on the spectrum, like whatever right. that looks like, I think that is a piece of information that needs to be relayed. But you get into all the stigma where like there are parents who feel like that doesn't define their child or it is looked at very negatively and you don't want to share that information,
sure.
which I totally get and validate. But like when it comes to this stuff, like it's important to know so that we can give the right care, give
right.
the right level of compassion, even though we should be giving that level to everyone,
but maybe
but like
differing.
An extra layer of like, we need to be sure that we're giving these specific needs to this person.
Right.
Just to help. Like, we want it as less traumatizing as possible. And the more information we have, like, the better we can
right.
do it, for them. And that, I mean, with me, I'm, like, constantly on alert for it. Like,
sure.
we go on a seizure call, and knowing that seizures are more prominent in autistic, if we're talking about children right now, mm-hmm. like they're more prominent in autistic children. Like as soon as I hear seizure, I'm like, maybe this kid is autistic. And like, I go into it with that, but like people don't. Mm-hmm. And so, I think just more knowledge, every type of trait or something that I can recognize in my head, because I'm also like dealing with it. I'm just an extra level aware and like cautious of all the things of like, what can I do? Having to ask the parents, like, what are their sensitivities?
So let's go to that.
Yeah.
So do you have an example you can talk me through? I guess,
I have a couple.
Do you have one
of ones that have gone poorly? That there's a specific call that started all of this.
That would be great.
Uh-huh. So,
and then we can talk about a success.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give a few different types of. Okay.
Sorry, because I know a tiny bit of your world, but not nearly enough.
Yeah. So the one that started all of this was a 13-year-old female, and we went there. I think it was for like a psychiatric episode, like something like that, which already bothers me. But we go to that, and are told prior that she is autistic,
okay,
along with some other mental illnesses. Not calling autism a mental illness. No.
There's other stuff. Yeah.
I definitely just want to make that known. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Along with additional just mental illness things. But I could just tell, even knowing ahead of time, we were told she's autistic. And this was like fresh for me with my diagnosis. And I hadn't really told anyone. And so I'm like feeling this. Yeah. Police get involved. There's like four cops. She's locked herself in her room. It was just traumatic.
That's triggering me.
She kept saying no. It was very much like echolalia, which is like repeating words. It wasn't in the like defiance manner. So that was getting misperceived. When her door would open, there's an alarm on it. So it was like blaring noise, which... sensory overload. Yeah. It was just chaotic and a lot, and she wasn't listening to the police officers. And this is also a time where I was like, I don't know how much to like involve myself. This was a time where I was like, I don't want to out myself.
Sure.
I don't know what that looks like for this type of job. It was just, it was a big moment. It ended up us like needing to drag her out of the house, needing to restrain her. It just elevated with like no need for it in my eyes. And you could tell there just wasn't like a moment of like trying to figure out how to go about this differently, knowing that she's autistic. It was just kind of like, this is what we're doing. And
it gets all escalated.
There was just no like, if we were to go to, let's say, a deaf patient, you would think considerations would be put in place to better help take care of that individual. Right. This should be the same type of thing, but that's not in place because people don't know what it is. So you could just tell, like that type of thing, like it just wasn't taken into consideration. We get her in the back and I ride along with the medic unit, and she was fine. Like once in the back, I'm asking about the lights. Sometimes blood pressure cuffs can be too much. Like she was just calm. I mean, as if none of that had just happened. And it just kind of pointed out to me that was a very unnecessary. And two, I just then think how traumatic that is.
Well, for
her.
Well, for her and parents and responder. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of folks going through. I'm hearing it.
Yeah.
And I'm getting this feeling of
it was a lot. So that kind of really encouraged me to like want and need, felt the need to do, because public speaking, standing in front of class, it is not something I'm comfortable with.
Not something you strive for every day.
But it just, even with this of like, if not me, then who? I am the one who put that kit. I just felt the need to do it and advocate for that. And so then, we have the kits and everything. I've heard stories of one individual told me that they went to a call, and again, for a psychiatric episode, a kid on a school bus, and police basically was... This is hearsay also, but holding him down.
Sure,
He was having what I would refer to as a meltdown.
Sure,
But they believed it. He was having some psychotic episode. Our crews get there. They load him on the gurney. They load him up. Notice that he, just based off behavior, was actually probably autistic. Wow. They used the weighted blanket. Calm. How much that helped.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was like very cool to hear that like there's been instances where things have helped. I went on a call recently. It was a seizure. And later into the call, they told us she was autistic, which is okay. Like, we still got the information. Right. But like, as we were walking down the stairs, I was just like asking those questions of what kind of sensitivities, mm-hmm. Would a weighted blanket be yay or nay? Like, some people don't like that pressure. And she was like, that would be like actually really helpful. So broke out the kit. There's just been instances where you can tell it's helpful. But I think the biggest thing is trying to get our people to learn enough to be able to initiate that stuff. Mm-hmm. Because it's still a fairly newer kit. And I don't think people right off the bat think to like use it, because it's just not regularly used.
Sure.
Yeah.
But having that as a resource, as another option, having that for folks that I think you mentioned way earlier, maybe don't know, they aren't diagnosed, or sometimes those things help people that don't have that diagnosis. But
even just neurodiverse patients in general. I mean, even with the fidget toys, like, I'll offer those, because like, why not? We're all like stressed out riding in a medic unit, like,
right?
Here's something to like, those help
distract yourself from
calm yourself down.
Well, and all going back to that compassion part, like even more compassion.
Yeah,
I love that. I love that.
Man.
So you're gonna teach the class again coming up. Do you have any additions you're wanting to put on, or any future ideas or expansion or anything? Or?
I have tried to, with the class specifically or where it goes?
Both.
Okay.
You just gave me even more content, yeah. So both.
with the class itself, it is interesting because a lot of it is like the stories I have. I'm not really going to like change all of that.
Sure.
But a lot of it is like, this came to be with an ex-partner. And so a lot of stories are like within that relationship of how that even came to be. And so it's kind of funny to, I'm going to have to preface in the beginning. These are all like old. I just didn't want to rewrite everything.
Sure.
Like, it's already scripted for me. I need that.
And it works.
Yes.
It's valid.
There's a few like factual things, like statistics that I needed to change. But mostly it's like, it's a curriculum in my mind. So it's pretty set. And then I guess I would love to do it elsewhere, just to work with people's awareness within first responder world. So at some point I hope that happens.
Well, I will be name dropping and sharing if you don't mind, because, you know, through my journey the last year and a half or so, I've run into a lot of departments and such, and it's like, you know, we really don't do that, or haven't thought of it, or whatever else, or oh, that'd be great, and then on to the next thing. And so I would love to be like, you need to listen to this episode and call this person, because
maybe don't go off how I talk on this though. My PowerPoint is just very well prepared.
Oh, sure.
Because I was able to.
We're having a conversation. This isn't PowerPoint.
But it is different.
We're having a conversation. Don't judge yourself on this until you hear it later. Until you hear it later.
I'm judging myself.
Yeah, well, me too. So, again, we're joining in this. We're going through it together. Personally, with work, do you have future hopes and plans? What are you going to be running?
I don't know. Outside of just the firefighter EMT part, I'm on our water rescue team. I'm involved in our peer support committee. That's not the right word. Peer support team.
Okay. Yeah.
It's the PST.
Okay.
That is what it is. And then like our equity, we have a committee for that. And so I'm involved in a few things. The like personal side, like that kind of stuff is really where I'm interested of like connecting with people in those ways of whether it be differences or just giving different perspective. So anything in that, I love like getting to be a part of and just hoping that at some point, I'm sure even the next time we'll need this training, like it'll have to come back up anyway. Mm-hmm. Of just getting to further teach in those ways.
Honestly, I'm just wondering when, you know, now that we're near best friends or gonna be talking all the time, I'm just wondering when I'm gonna have to change to chief. So, you know, I just I don't want to miss that and then just be like, oh, I didn't call you.
No.
Right, oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, right now I actually have not a lot of interest in promoting. I'm just trying to go day to day, survive.
Right.
It sounds a little overwhelming to go through all that. I like to be told what to do, and then I can do it really well.
Gotcha.
Telling people what to do, I don't know.
Maybe you'll get there, yeah. But Joe, don't push me. I'm just curious. I don't want to miss that step.
I'll let you know.
Please do. I'd be so excited. Be like, I knew it. She was just being humble. I knew it.
Yeah. No.
Anything I missed? Anything you thought I'd ask you that I didn't or should have?
I don't know. A lot of it gets into like, I guess my journey with autism. And I think part of why I did the class two is you have all the stereotypes of like, well, you don't look autistic and whatever that means, but of like breaking down, like, yes, someone like me, it being, I'm going off different thoughts, but even like it's considered this invisible disability because a lot of it is internal and you're not seeing what's going on inside of me, but the amount of like struggle that actually exists and why it's important for people to learn about it, because I think people think, well, it's not even like that prevalent, like,
right,
why do I need to learn about it?
Right.
Well, like the numbers are increasing, which people want to then say there's an epidemic, which is not true, because you have adults getting diagnosed and those statistics are going towards today when they should be going back to 40 years ago.
Right.
So like none of that is accurate. So I think it would be more evened out actually, but there's just so much more awareness now.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we communicate with people, not even in work or like patient to provider type way, but just like how we're relating with people and talking with people. If like, I just feel like that knowledge is important because of those assumptions and miscommunication and how quickly we are to judge people and how hurtful that is. Like across the board, the world needs to just like better equip. Because when we know more, like, we do better, I think. So.
Well, and I'll share with you. So when you shared your diagnosis with me through email, I was like, okay. Like.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it didn't factor in my mind of firefighter. It was just like, oh, that's great that there's this additional experience that you're drawing from. Mm-hmm. That's what went through my head. I was really, and I still am, really excited about this interview. So I was telling friends and a couple other people and, you know, just like, yeah, I'm so excited. Blah, blah, blah. And one, very nice person, very well-meaning. But I was like, I shared that you had a diagnosis. And like, they're a firefighter?
Oh.
But also it went to a curiosity. So this is why I love this person, is it went to a curiosity. They're like, I've got to listen to that. Like, that's got to be great. So, but they did have this initial, like, well, how can that be?
Yeah. What's interesting is even through my class, the amount of people that have come to me after, like, I am not the only autistic person in my department, first mm-hmm. of all. And even within families, like people's partner, people's children, people's mm-hmm. nephew or niece, like it's across, like each class I have people raise their hand of like if they know someone who's on the spectrum, and the numbers are like it's here, like it's very much here, and we should know about it, and it looks all like very different. Yeah. If you this quote or saying of, if you've met one autistic person, you've met one autistic person.
Right.
Like, it's very different across, it can be very different across the board. Yes, there's common traits and differences and all of that. But, like, yeah, we need to meet people with curiosity rather than those assumptions.
Well, and we don't all walk around with our diagnoses labeled over our heads.
Yeah.
So just because somebody isn't telling you what they've got, what they're dealing with, doesn't mean you're not running into folks. Well,
there's a story of so one of our members' daughters has two autistic children. And so when I was doing this, I was having them come as well to give kind of a different part to it and be able to ask her as a parent questions and stuff like that, because I can do as much research, but I'm not a parent. I mean, and just one of them is nonverbal, and going to the grocery store and some person like said hi to her and she obviously did not respond back.
Right.
And the like comment that was given right after that of like, your child's disrespect, like just the assumptions that happen, like you have no idea what's going on, and it just boggles my mind and it's so upsetting. Like there's so many stories like that, mm-hmm. and even my own stories of like assumptions being made or how I'm perceived at work, or I've had a complaint made because of my facial expressions. And so it's just, it's all over the board of just be nice.
Right. Compassion.
Yeah.
But how great that you're providing this and you have the support to provide this and you're getting folks at least starting to look and understand.
Yeah.
So if I didn't miss anything else, okay. Again, thank you so much for talking with me.
Yeah, thank you.
This was a blast. For those of you listening, this has been the Dad's Move Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Saladino. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you listen to the next one.